speaker as well as this one.
Hi, my name is Alyssa and I am an alcoholic. So before coming today, I thought, you know, like, what is the message that I'm trying to bring? I'm only 90 days sober. What can I offer, you know? And that's a big question, but I know where I'm at today, and I know that it's a better place than I was at 90 days ago. And that's what I have to bring. And I always hear, you know, sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I have plenty of experience. And here I found my strength. And with my strength here, I have my hope. I started drinking around my freshman year, sophomore year in high school. And I quickly went down that slope. I remember my first drink, and it was alone. Never did I ever think, you know, anything came of that. But it was in my house, and for me, it was, I'd be practicing for when I go to parties, you know, because I'm in high school now, and am I going to be able to take a shot and hold it down, you know, and am I going to embarrass myself? So that's what my reasoning was, you know, was, okay, I got to practice for this because I don't want to make a fool of myself. And, you know, practice made perfect because I could do it. And as soon as it went and ran through my veins, you know, I felt that warm feeling. And no, the taste wasn't great for me the first time, you know. It was kind of disgusting. But the feeling was what really hooked me. And I grew up with loving parents, a good family, you know, but it was my insecurities that were really holding me down. In school, I was bullied a lot. In sixth grade, was when I found that I didn't like women or girls at all, because I had a traumatic experience, you know, and one girl said, don't talk to Alyssa, so the whole school didn't talk to me, and that's when I decided that all women were evil. Coming here. So I struggled with that. I struggled with who I was, and I bent to everyone's will. You know, if they wanted me this way, I would do it. If they wanted me that way, I would do it. And I never did anything for me. So drinking was for me. You know, I could do whatever I wanted and do what I wanted, but I needed a shot first to calm me down and make me feel ready, you know. And I didn't think it was a problem. I thought I was just being a kid, you know, experimenting. But I got into a lot of trouble with it, not only with my family, with school, but also just with who I was. And I thought I found who I was in my alcohol, but I didn't. It only made it worse. And I found that I began to hate myself more because of the things I was doing for my drinking. Lying, cheating, stealing, all of those things that come with it. And it just became a vicious cycle. I was drinking because of the things that I did when I drank, and then I'd make another mistake when I was drinking, so I would drink over it again, and it just went in a circle. And I couldn't get off that merry-go-round, you know. It just kept going and going. And February of 2011, which is this year, I decided I was going to get off the merry-go-round, but in a way that wasn't right. I was going to end my life. So I got in my mom's car, and right before I left, I knew what I wanted to do. But again, I couldn't do it without alcohol. So I had a drink of beer before I left to make sure that I was calm enough to do it. And I ran my car into a pool, going full speed. Destroying the whole side of my car. But God was with me that night, because I'm here today, and I got a second chance. And I'm so blessed. And I'm so glad that I get to see that now. Because now looking, there are so many things that I would have missed, that I didn't want to miss. And that was my spiritual awakening. Because about 2 weeks later, I went to a church that I didn't know anyone there, except one person, and I hadn't told anyone that what had happened, but I went up to ask for prayer, and the pastor put his hands on my head and said, God wants you to know that he helped you and he saved you, and that you should have died that night. And for me, that was like, what? You know, like, you don't know what happened. How do you know this? And no one else knew what happened, so it's not like someone said, hey, tell this girl this, you know? And so I knew in that moment that God was talking to me and saying, you know, that I have, he told me that I have a plan for you and a purpose. And up until that moment, I hated myself because I couldn't even kill myself right. And I had a damaged car on my hands. I had all of this that I had to do now, and I'm not dead. Well, that's what I wanted, and now I have to deal with all of this. And when I heard those words, I knew that there was a reason that I'm still alive. And today I get to live it. I get to live my life. I have a sponsor. I'm working my steps. I'm not done yet. And I never will be. It won't, even if I'm a year sober, 5 years sober, I'm still going to be here because I need to be here. Working my steps every day. And it's a journey. It's hard. It's going to be hard. But I know I'm not alone, and that's the biggest part for me, is knowing that I'm not alone. When I first went into my first rehab, you know, it was, you know, hearing these other people and hearing that they had the same thinking as me and the same actions, and I wasn't crazy. Well, I was, but we could be crazy together and work through it. And it's okay, you know, I don't have to do this alone. I have my higher power, and I have friends today, good friends, that aren't going to leave me if the cops come, you know. I have real friends, and that has been a blessing, and I'm so happy today. You know, I'm not perfect. And I'm never going to be perfect, but I can live with that today. I can live with who I am. It's not always easy looking in the mirror, because I know the things that I've done, but I know that I can fix it, and I know that I can move forward and press through and just live it day by day, because that's all I got, you know? Tomorrow will come if it comes, but today is where I need to be and what I need to focus on, and yeah, that's all really I have to say. Is just, if you're a newcomer, welcome. Those words were what kept me here, you know, walking in here and hearing welcome and feeling it. So if you're new, welcome and stay and keep coming back, because you'll find so many blessings here and friends and laughter and love. So thank you.
Abraham got a hell of a pitch.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Abraham, and I'm an alcoholic. And I thank God for another day of sobriety and for a second chance of life that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you heard from Beauty, now you're going to hear from the Beast. Hell of a pitch. It's going to be hard to top that, man. But, you know, this morning I got up, man. I got to backtrack a little bit. You know, I want to welcome the newcomers, man. You know, I love the newcomers. You know, we have a thing here, you know, that when anybody anywhere reaches out for help, we want to help out the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there for that. I'm responsible. So if you're new, you know, look around. Look how many hands are here, you know, people in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're here for you, man. You just got to reach out, you know. That's one thing I didn't do when I got here, you know, but I'm grateful to be here. This morning I got up, and I get up the same way I do every morning. Not wanting to sometimes, but I got up and I got on my knees. It's the first thing I do when I get up in the morning, is hit my knees and I thank God for another day and for a second chance of life, man. And you know, my wife cooked breakfast and I had the day off. She had the day off and my 26-year-old daughter's there, you know. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, she was 23 years old and life's good in my house today, you know. And I have these little kids, and we're setting up a Christmas tree, you know, putting on the lights, and here is a 2-year-old and 18-month-old man, and they're calling me Papa, you know, and I don't have any grandkids, you know, but they call me Papa, man. And the reason I say that is because 23 years ago today, December the 9th of 1988, is when I hope to God I took my last drink, you know. I got here, man, you know. It's a very emotional day for me because I remember back and I reflect back and before I came up here tonight, you know, I called my original sponsor, Tomas. You know, I carry his card and his number with me everywhere I go, like Rick. Rick's my other sponsor here. See, I have two sponsors, man, because like with drinking, one is not enough. So I have to have a couple of sponsors, man. And, you know, there's a lot of people here tonight that are very important to my sobriety. You know, David, Sammy, just people on and on. Danny, Holden, people that were here when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But for me, you know, I was born in 1960. I was born in a little town, Sanger, California, you know, eastern Fresno County. That's where I was born and raised. And I come from a family where it's just me and my mother and my stepdad. I never knew my real dad, you know, But my stepdad was like my real dad, you know. He treated us right, and his thing was that he worked every day, and on the weekends they were for him. Friday he would get paid, he would take us out grocery shopping and get us whatever we needed, and then he'd take off to the cantinas, you know, in the neighborhood there, and then my mom would tell me, hey, you know what? Here it is Sunday night, and your dad hasn't came home. Go find him, you know. And I would go to these cantinas, you know, on my 10-speed bike, my little bike, whatever. And I would get there, you know, and I would find them, and then I would tell them, you know, you need to go home. They want you at home. You know, and my mother, up until her death in 1989, she never drank a drop of alcohol. You know, she never drank, but my dad, stepdad did. And everybody around the neighborhood, they drank, and they would get in trouble, and the cops were always there, and those kind of things were happening, you know. But I know that for me, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had problems way before I got to AA. You know, I couldn't figure out why, you know, they would tell me, well, how come the kids are playing marbles, here you are, 6, 7, 5 years old, and you're stealing their picture money. You know, they'd be playing marbles, and I'd be taking their money, they'd put their little package by the tree, and I'd take it, you know. And I remember the first time I stabbed somebody, I was in kindergarten, you know. See, so those are the kind of behaviors that I had before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. You know, everything I did was backwards, you know. But, you know, and then in the third grade, I remember I would sign my own report cards, you know. I did that, you know. And everything was backwards for me, you know. And I was a kid that, you know, that always got picked on. I was a kid that always got made fun of. I was a kid that, you know, people would make fun of my family and those kind of things, you know. So I grew up with a lot of resentments, you know. I grew up with a lot of fear and a lot of resentments, you know. And for me, you know, when I discovered alcohol at a young age, it took all that away from me, you know. I felt the part of, I was able to relax, I was able to be myself, you know, and my drinking went on for a long time, for a lot of years, you know. What happened to me was that, you know, I come from a single, you know, just, I was the only one in my household, so pretty much I got to do what I wanted to do. You know, they never told me, you know, come home at this time of night, or don't come home, whatever. You know, they just let me do what I wanted to do. And I remember back, you know, in the 70s, you know, they would let me have kegers at my house, you know. My mom would always say, you know what, as long as you're staying here at the house and you're drinking here, I don't have to worry about you getting in trouble, you know. So we would have the kegers in the living room, man, and the party in the living room, and my mom and dad trying to sleep in the bedroom, you know, and those things would happen at my house, you know. And my house was a cool house, you know. Everybody came to my house and spent the night at my house, and we would sleep in the basement and other things in the basement, and all those kind of things would happen, you know. But I can tell you that, you know, 1978, I was 18 years old, the age of Alyssa right here. Now I want to tell you, you know, my thinking tells me, tell them about the time you got arrested when you were 18 years old on a gun charge. I got arrested for a gun charge, felony gun charge. But the truth is that it was a pellet gun. I got arrested for a pellet gun, man. And I was sitting at the Fresno County Jail in 1978, you know, and on a felony charge, you know. So if I want to sound good, I'm going to say I got arrested for a gun charge. But I won't say it was a pellet gun, but it was a pellet gun. But that's the way my life went for a lot of years, man. You know, I would hang out with these people and we would drink and we would get in trouble. And for me, you know, like I said, it took all that stuff away from me. It made me feel okay with myself. 1981, you know, I decided, I had this bright idea that I'm going to get married, man, and maybe my drinking will slow down, you know. And I met this girl here in Visalia, and I'm from Sanger, and got married and moved to Visalia, you know, and the drinking didn't stop, you know. I wasn't employable, you know, when I got here. My wife did all the working, you know. And that's the way my life went also for a long time. You know, I can tell you that in 1985, the best thing happened to me was that my wife left, and she took my six-month-old daughter at that time, you know, and I remember, you know, I came home another time. I was in Sanger for the whole weekend, and I come back on a Sunday, the house is cleaned out, and there's a note on the refrigerator, and it said, you know, you need to get yourself together, you need to get sober, you know, I can't be with you anymore. The only thing that was there was a mattress and my shotgun that I had, you know. They left that there for me. You know, and I continued to drink, man. That didn't stop me. You see, my mother tried to get me sober. My family tried to get me sober. When I got here, you know, I got here insane, man. The big book talks about it in chapter 3, you know, that I got here at the gates of insanity, you're dead. That's what happened to me, you know, when I got here. You know, I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't stand myself. And like Alyssa said, you know, 23 years ago today, you know, I come to in the morning and I remember saying, you know, this has got to stop. And I felt different. But I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know about recovery. And what happened with me was that I have those suicidal thoughts, man. And I remember saying, you know, I'm going to go to the river bottom there, the Kings River, and I'm just going to go ahead and blow my brains out. You see, because that was my way out. I understand what you were saying. You know, I identify with that. You know, and for me, I'm just glad that God intervened and I didn't do that, you know. And I remember back in the 80s, you know, they would have these commercials on TV and they would say, 28 days program with a couple of day follow-ups. So I said, shit, there's the answer, you know. So here I am in hot water, man, and I'm living with my mother, you know, after a broken up marriage, and I'm living off my mother, and she's on the fixed income, and I'm drinking all her extra money away, you know. And she finally got fed up and says, you know what, you have to do something. I can't have you here anymore. You know, I love you, but you need to go. And that's what happened, man, is I made that call. And you see, my mother didn't know how to drive. She never drove in her lifetime, you know. And the people that I knew, they did what I did. You know, they drank and they did other things just like I did. And so I had a friend down the street, and her name was Esther. Esther was a beautiful girl, is a beautiful girl. She was model material. Matter of fact, her sister worked in New York as a model. You know, beautiful. The problem with Esther was that she ended up in the neighborhood on our side of the tracks. You know, she had more tattoos than, you know, anybody that I've known from neck down. She was sleeved up. You know, and this girl, her life had changed. And the reason why her life had changed at that time was because she was the biggest drug dealer in that town at that time. See, and Esther was staying clean. Esther was staying sober. I didn't know anybody else that was doing that, so I went to her. And I said, hey, Esther, you know, I made this phone call, and they want me to go over there right away. And then I remember her saying, well, are you sure that you want to do that? Are you sure? And then I told her, yeah, you know, I need to get sober. And then she goes, are you sure you're not overreacting? You know, she told me just like that. She goes, because I know you. You know, they used to call me A.B. back then. She goes, A.B., I know you. I know how you are. I said, no, this time I need help. So I went into that place in Clovis, you know, and who would have known that I would have got sober up there in a cowboy town in Clovis, you know. And, it was the Alcohol Recovery Center in Clovis, you know. And I get to this place, and they asked me a bunch of questions, and I answered all, yes, the 20 questions. So they told me, you need to stay here, man. And see, for me, that's how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the type of alcoholic that I can't come in. I couldn't have came into this, you know, meeting and got sober. I needed to be put away somewhere. Because for me, you know, I borrowed, begged, and stole to drink, you know. I remember, you know, stealing money out of my daughter's piggy bank, you know, to drink. I remember stealing money from my mother to drink. That's the type of alcoholic that I am. You see, I'm willing to go to any lengths to drink. You know, and that's what happened to me. But see, I get into this place, and then they give me this big book right here. You know, I think of Ben Holden, we're talking before the meeting, $16,000 big book. You know, but I'm grateful, man, because it gave me time for me to look at me, to work on some of those steps that they have. There's those little packets that they have, and the resentment chart, and all those kind of things that they have there. You know, and I wasn't really participating. I knew that I was going to go back to the way it was. I wanted it to cool down. I wanted my wife to get off my back. I wanted my wife back, but I wasn't willing to do the work, you know. And what happened to me was that I stuck around there, and I stayed. They told me that, you know, you're taking up bed space, Abraham. You need to go. You know, we don't need you here. You need to give your bed up. And I remember them saying, you know, go. And I told them, I'm not leaving, man. Nobody's going to make me leave here. And I stayed. And then they told me, we're not going to your funeral. My counselor told me that. And I remember telling her, you know, that's okay, you weren't invited anyway. You're not going to be there. You don't want to be at my funeral with my friends. But anyway, I get introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I start going to the meetings at the Alano Club in Fresno. You know, and that's where I met my sponsor, you know, Tomas. And what happened with me is I was sitting in the back. And Rick talks about it, you know, about being mute. I was mute for a long time, man. I sat in the back. And because I knew that you guys were going to give me these things to read, and I didn't know how to read when I got here, you know. And I remember them telling me, keep coming back. And I said, I'm not going to come back. What for? But see, when I would see Lisa or I would see Anna, the nice-looking girls, I kept going back to those meetings. That's what happened to me. And it took what it took for me to get here, man. And that's what happened, you know. And I remember when I first got here, man, I was married legally. I had a 19-year-old girlfriend. And I had another girlfriend on the side, you know, and I'm juggling all these things at one time, you know, because that's the kind of lifestyle I live, man. No matter what it took, I was willing to do it. The 19-year-old was there for the money, you know, and the car and all those kind of things that I needed. She would take care of that, you know, and the older one would be there for whatever, you know. And then the wife was there, you know, for the daughter, you know, those kind of things. That was my thinking, man. That's the way I thought, because that's what I would see, you know, and my lifestyle was that way. You know, I wasn't always overweight, man, and I got pictures to prove it. But that's what happened to me, man. You know, and then so I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I start telling Famas all these things, and he says, wait a minute, man, what are you doing here? We don't do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. He goes, the first thing you're going to have to do, Abraham, is to admit to your innermost self, man, that you're an alcoholic. Otherwise, this program is not going to work for you. You're just like me, man. You're hard-headed, and you want everything your way. See, all my life I lived compared prior to investigation is the way it was for me. I judged everything and everybody and everyone. It didn't matter, you know. Because if you didn't live on the side of the tracks where I live, I didn't have nothing to do with you, man. You know. And what happened to me was that I gave up that little 19-year-old girlfriend. I gave up the other girlfriend, but then I hooked up with a girl in AA, you know. You know how we do it, man. And so I hooked up with another girl, man, and I still have my wife. We're kind of separated at the time. And I always pick the winners, man. This girl was married to a sheriff. And so here I am with her, man, and she's trying to get sober herself. And then she's got this husband that's a sheriff, you know. And that's the way it went for me, man. And we lived together for about a year, man, in sobriety, you know. And the sheriff would come over, and I'd go out the back door, and he'd come in the front door, you know, and just to pay child support, you know, those kind of things, you know. That's the way my life was, man. So I didn't come here easy, man. It was hard for me at first. I didn't want to give up anything. I didn't want to surrender. I didn't want to change, you know, when I got here. My partner Albert says, you know, perfect, man, that, you know, he came in here the way he came in, man, and he found recovery here. And that's what happened to me, you know. I stuck around. The only two things that I did right was I showed up to meetings and I didn't drink. Showed up to meetings and I didn't drink. You know, at 6 months of sobriety, my mother passed away, you know, a week before my 6 weeks of my 6 months. And that morning was her funeral. That evening I went to a meeting like this and I picked up a 6 month chip. And I knew then that I was going to be able to stay sober if I did the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the way it was outlined in the book to the best of my ability. You know, like I said, when I got here, I didn't know how to read, man. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't laugh at me. They didn't make fun of me. None of those things. They told me, you know what, Abraham? You have too many excuses, man. You know, you're full of excuses. He goes, but you don't have no reason for it. See, here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll help you stay sober if you want to stay sober. We'll teach you how to read if you want to learn how to read, man. All you got to do is ask. And I remember, I did the Hooked on Phonics thing, man. You know, this is the original one, man. I read through the book, and I still do that at times, too. When I get lazy, I'll put the tapes on, man. You know, I went to a lot of big book studies. I went to a lot of step studies, man, and that's how I learned how to read, you know. And for me, it was a blessing because I didn't know none of that, man. You know, I didn't know how to read. I didn't know those kind of things, man. I just did what I wanted to do. But finally, you know, this guy taught some sense into me, man, and I started working on those steps, man, and he took me through them. And I remember when I got to that fourth step, you know, I would see people that I got sober with. They were getting drunk. They were drinking. And I remember saying, man, I don't want to be that person. You know, I want to stay sober as long as I can. And for me, I started writing, you know, out of the book right here, you know, the columns, man. I started doing that grudge list and all those kind of things, man. And then Tomas says, well, you know what? I don't care how you spell. It doesn't matter to me. You just put it down because you're going to have to repeat it in your fifth step. You know, and that's what we did. I did my inventory and I did my list. And that fourth step, to the best of my willingness at that time, and then we did a fifth step together, you know, at the VA hospital, and I remember before a speaker meeting. You know, and I called him tonight. Before I came, I said, hey, you know, you have any advice for me? He says, you know what? Just get out of the way and be honest, you know. And he told me to tell all you guys, you know, that, you know, Merry Christmas, and that he, you know, he wants to come back. And just remember the reason for the season is what he said. You know those old timers that have those one-liners? You know, and I haven't got it yet, but probably by the time I get home, I'll probably pick it up, you know. I'm a little slow there. But, you know, for me, again, man, I started to get honest with myself, and I started to get honest with Tomas, and I started to participate in my recovery, man. And what they did for me was they got me involved in secretarying a meeting, you know, at the Fresno Alano Club, man. And you're talking about, you know, 150 people to 250 people at a speaker meeting. And I was new, you know, and that was a scary thing for me, man, because, you know, like I said, I sat in the back for a long time, man. And I couldn't talk when I got here, man, you know, so that was a big deal for me. It got me out of myself, man. And I was able to participate. And I was able to get out of myself and meet people and just say, hey, my name's Abraham and I'm an alcoholic, man. And that helped me out a lot. And then I remember they started H&I. They said, you know, you have to go to the hospitals and institutions. And I go, what's that for? They told me, you have to go in there, man, and share your experience, strength, and hope with these people, because these people, you know, they need the message of recovery. He goes, you don't have to have the message, just show up, man, dress up and show up. And I did that for a long time, man, for a couple of years. You know, and I was going over there and doing these things and trying to help these people out, man. And what I found out was that they were helping me. They were helping me stay sober. You know, it wasn't me helping them, it was they were helping me. You know, and Alcoholics Anonymous, man, you know, for me was the savior, man. You know, I believe in this program. I believe in the singleness of purpose, and I believe that that I'm here for a reason, like Alyssa said. You know, I can tell you that when I first came to AA, my family didn't want to talk to me, man. You know, they were upset. You know, and they told me that if I came around, they were going to call the cops, you know. And then I remember starting to, you know, I went over there, man, and I asked for forgiveness, you know. And when I got to that seventh step and then did that list in the eighth step, you know, and then I had to make amends. The first one I made amends to was my mother before she passed away, you know. And then I was telling Rick that my first couple of years, you know, my sponsor was, he was tough. He told me, you know, you're going to have to make financial amends. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you have to pay back. You owe a lot of people. You're going to have to start paying back. And then I said, I can't afford to do that. And I remember him saying, well, you're going to pay back whatever you have, $5, $10, $20, whatever it takes until you pay it off. You know, and I did that, and it took me a couple of years to do that. And I got all my financial amends paid off, you know, and then it was time for me to make amends to my wife, you know. And then I remember we had been split up for a while, and I told her, hey, you know, can I take you out to lunch? And then her dad said, no, you're not taking my daughter out to lunch, you know. And she went ahead, and we went out to lunch and took my daughter, and I made amends to her, you know, and my daughter. You know, and then I remember time went on, man, and I stayed sober, kept going to meetings, and I started working, doing those things. And then for me, what happened was that without me knowing, you know, me and my wife ended up back together, you know, and that was a blessing for me. You know, this September we celebrated 30 years of marriage. And I've been sober, only a couple of, you know, 23 years, you know. So when they told me that Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the wonders of the world, lives get restored here, families are reunited here, it's happened to me. You know, I can truly attest to that. You know, and I keep working on it. You know, my father-in-law passed away about 5 years ago. This is a man that in 1985, before my wife left, he came to the house with a shotgun. And I remember him saying, Abraham, you step out here, and I'm gonna shoot you. you know. And I was trying to figure out, well, why, you know? And, you know. So, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I might look dumb, but I'm not, you know. I didn't step out the door. And he had it like that, you know, Hatfield and McCoy type thing. And, but you know what? When I got sober and was making those amends, I took him and my mother-in-law to lunch, man. My mother-in-law hated my guts, man. And I don't blame her today. But yeah, I was able to make amends to them. And my father-in-law passed away 5 years ago, like I said. And on my shift, family was taking shifts at that time. I was there by a hospital bed, and I had this book with me. And I was reading this book, and I was there with them. And what happened was that he passed away, you know, and I was there with him. So for me, you know, that was the best amends I could have made to him, that I was there until he passed, you know, and I was sober. And I remember the family appreciated that, you know, and this is a man that I had burned. This is a man that I had disrespected, you know, and I was able to make amends to him and be friends with him. And he would take me fishing, you know, and he told me he was proud of me. You know, that he goes, you know, I couldn't have picked a better son-in-law. You know, and I remember that the other son-in-law, he was a good guy. You know, he had a business and he had all these things going for him. Boats and all that kind of stuff. You know, me, I don't have none of that stuff, man. You know, and that son-in-law is the one that, you know, he did some other stuff and he was no longer part of the family. And I remember them saying, you know, every time I would go to the family functions, they would say, you know, don't bring Abe. Can't bring him because stuff disappears, you know. And then, you know, and that's what would happen, man. You know, like I said, I'm a thief, man. You know, I don't do it today, but back then I did, you know. And so for me, what happened was that I made amends to these people and they loved me unconditionally, man. And they showed me trust and love, you know, and that's what I had when I got here. I know that my mother was proud of me. I know that my mother told me that, you know, you need to stay sober, man, and keep going to those meetings. And that's what I've been doing, you know, to the best of my ability. You know, there's a guy here tonight, Danny. You know, my 19th birthday and my 20th birthday, I wasn't going to meetings. You know, I was staying home, and I had all these excuses, you know, that I don't want to go to a meeting, man. I'm tired of hearing the same thing over and over and over again. The same two guys at the podium, and I'm tired of that. I don't want to hear their stuff, you know. And what I figured out was that it wasn't you guys, it was me, you know. I had to take a look at me, and I had to get back into the steps, you know. And I remember calling that Tomaso Fresno. He said, you know what, if you don't do anything, man, you're going to drink, you know. And it wasn't that I wanted to drink. But everything else came back. All the fear, all the anger, all that stuff came back, you know. And restless, irritable, and discontent. My wife would tell me, you need to go to a meeting. Go find one of your AA friends, you know. Get out of here. I don't want you here. You know, and I said, nah, man, I've been sober for a while. I don't need to go to those meetings. I can just read this book, and I can still pray and meditate and listen to a speaker tape here and there. It didn't work, man. It didn't work because I had all that fear. And then I ran into Danny, man, at my niece's soccer game and his daughter's soccer game. And then I remember him telling me, he goes, hey, you know, there's a good meeting over there, Monday night men's tag meeting. You know, and Danny turned me on to that meeting, man. And I'm grateful for that, brother. Thank you so much, man. That's my home group today, the Monday night men's tag meeting, man. That's the group that I belong to. And these guys hold me accountable. Sometimes, you know, when I'm not there, they're calling, man. That's the thing about AA people, man. You don't show up, they're going to call. They're going to call, man. And they do that. They do that real well, too. You know, and I do that. You know, I've learned how to do that for people, too, man. You know, it works both ways. You know, at dinner tonight, we were talking, man. We had a good dinner tonight. You know, Rick, he puts on a good spread. But we had a good dinner tonight, man, and we were talking about, you know, recovery and things like that. And you know, me and Rick, we come from the same towns pretty much, a town away. And he ran with a lot of people that I ran with, you know. And we have a mutual friend that's sitting on death row right now, you know. And the way I look at it was that I feared this guy that's on death row, man. You know, every time he would come my way, I'd walk on the other side of the street, you know, because he was that notorious. And then, you turn around and look at Rick, and him and Rick were buddy-buddy. that's crazy, man. This guy ran with some crazy guys over there, man. And I remember when I met him, he said he was from Parlier, and I said, well, I'm from Sanger, man. You know, the Sanger gang, man, that's where I'm from. And he knows them all. You know, he met them all. He ran with them all, so he became my sponsor. So I have two sponsors today, man. One in Fresno, one here. And I need that, man, because I need to be held accountable. You know, my daughter, except she was 3 years old when I got sober. She's 26 now. She still lives at home, and I don't mind that at all. You know, I love that little girl to death, man. She was there in the midst of my drinking, man. I remember I would take her back home. And I would be there, you know, outside in the bonfire with all the fellas, man. And she would be the one running to get us beers and all that stuff, you know. And here we are, you know, a lot of validated gang members at that time that were there, you know, and with guns and on parole, all those kind of things. And my daughter was in the middle of that, you know. And that's what I put her through at that time. Fortunate enough for me that she doesn't remember too much of it. She remembers the nicknames. She'll say, hey, whatever happened to this guy? He's dead. Whatever happened to that guy? He's doing life. You know, so she does remember some of those things. But see, my daughter has an unconditional love for me, man, with those strings attached. You know, when she hurts, I hurt, man. I went through the boyfriend stuff, you know, and I remember the first guy that came over. He came over and my wife was not looking. We got a guy coming over to see your daughter, and he's going to come and ask if she can go to the prom. I said, you ain't going to the damn prom, man. I go, I didn't go to the prom. She goes, she never went to school, is what she told me. And I wish she was here tonight. She would verify that. But and this guy comes over, you know, and he brings his mother and his father. That was a good thing he did that. So they come in and you know, and I'm in the back room, and they walk in, and I could hear them talking, and then I come out, and then I see the mom look at the dad, and I said, oh shit, you know, they had that look, you know. But I introduced myself to them, and I told them, you know, who I was and what my expectations were, you know, of their son dating my daughter. You know, I have the right to do that today. I want to do that today. See, I didn't have that right before, you know, and I got that right here in Alcoholics Anonymous because of you people. You guys walk that path for me, man. And it's not different paths. It's one path. It's this path right here. That's what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Because I've tried all those other paths and nothing works. And when I stick to this path, you know, I'm able to handle things, man. Financial things, relationship things, those kind of things, man. I'm able to go through that. See, because this thing up here tells me that you're okay. You know, you've been sober long enough. You go to enough AA meetings. You don't have to go that much. See, and for me, my sponsor put it this way, you know, you have that stinking thinking, man, that always led you to drinking, you know, and he's right, man. So today what I do for that stinking thinking, man, is I talk to people, you know, I'll call Rick, I'll call Albert, you know, me and Albert, we've come a long way. You know, when I first moved to Visalia, man, I had 2 years of sobriety, and I remember going to the Alano Club, and I'm thinking, man, where's all the homies? There's no homies here, man. What's up with that? You know, because I still had that attitude of gratitude when I got here, too. And then I remember there's this guy riding a 10-speed bicycle, man, real slow. And he had a trench coat on. And he had a ball cap. And it said Columbo on it. And I said, wow. And he's riding up on this bike, and it's a girl's bike, and it's a pink fluorescent bike. You know, and Albert comes off, and we meet, and we started hitting it, man. We started hitting a lot of meetings, man. And before Alcoholics Anonymous, and Albert knows this too, because we've talked about it, we wouldn't have got along, man. You know, because I'm from Fresno County, he's from Tulare County, and we played that game. You know, but he turned out to be a good friend of mine. We lost his mother at 6 years of sobriety, man, and I was able to be there for him, you know, because people were there for me when my mother passed away. And it was an honor for me because I met his mother before she passed, and I spent some years with them, you know, and his mom was just like my mom, you know. And for me, I was blessed to be a pallbearer, you know, in her funeral, man. I was able to carry that casket. You see, and those are the guys that, you know, that keep me on the path. Brig and all these guys, the women. I respect the women today, man, because, you know, now I know because I have a daughter, you know. And I don't like nothing happening to my little girl because I know that when she cries, it hurts me, man. And when she broke up with this one guy that the family came over, I was upset, man. You know, and my wife goes, don't you go do anything. I said, it's not about doing anything. It's just that I'm crying and I'm angry because she's hurt, you know. And I'm able to do that today and be there for them. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I love being here, today. I love to be invited places, you know. Nobody invited me anywhere before I got here, you know. I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change my sobriety today for anything, you know. And these guys that taught me, man, they told me, no matter what happens, Abraham, you don't drink. Job or no job, you don't drink. Relationship, no relationship, you don't drink. You know, no matter what happens, you don't drink. You keep coming back, you know. And that's what I've been able to do here, man. You know, I stand before you, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stand before you, you know, blessed, because since I got here, man, I haven't had to go back out. I don't know why, man. All I know is that I found a power greater than myself here, you know, and I believe in this program. And it doesn't matter where you come from, man, or what you think you are. What matters is that you get here, you know. I don't care where you're from, man. As long as you get here, you're going to get this program if you want it, man. You know, I'm not one of those guys that I'm going to throw the book at you. But I know that what works for me and what works for you is this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here on a Friday night. Do you see? I love you guys, man. It's just emotional today for me, man, because like I said, 20 years ago I got here, man. I didn't know what I was getting into, you know. All I knew is that I didn't want to live anymore, and I didn't want to drink anymore, but I didn't know how to not do that, you know. And you guys took me by the hand and told me that it was going to be okay, that I wasn't alone, you know. And I remember thinking, well, these people don't know me. You know, how are they going to tell me that? You know, that it's going to be okay. How can you assure me that it's going to be okay? And they told me, you just got to believe that we believe. We want you here. We need you here. You know, and I hear that all the time. See, for me, it's not the 23 years, man. That's not it. It's not the 23 years. For me, it's that I haven't had a desire to drink, you know, in a lot of years, you know. And I found that power greater than myself here, you know, which I choose to call God today, man. You know, when I'm self-centered, I'm not God-centered, man. You know, it's just that simple. You know, I go to Spanish Alcoholics Anonymous meetings too, man. Rick takes me. Rick goes, man. Believe it or not, everybody likes Rick goes. I tell you, this guy's a jack of all trades, man. But, we go there, man, and if you've never been to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Spanish, man, I'll invite you to go with me, man, because it's awesome, man. You don't have to understand any of it, man, but they're reading out of this book and they're carrying the message of AA, you know. I don't know if, you know, most of the time if I carry that message of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I can tell you, like my buddy Ray says, you know, that he's an example, and I believe I'm an example of either good or bad in AA. You know, but I know that I stay sober, and I know that I haven't had to drink or do anything else in this amount of time. So I know that if I can do it, anybody can do it. I used to hear that from the podium, man. People would say, you know, I'm staying sober, you can do it. Well, you don't know me. How can you say that? You don't know what I'm about. But see, when I got into these steps and that sponsor walked me through this, he showed me, you know, and what I found out was about me, the truth about me, not about anybody else. You know, I had to find out the truth about Abraham. You know, and I still do that, man. I work on that on a daily basis, man. You know, it says in our book, the lack of power was our dilemma, Abraham's dilemma. I don't have the power to stay sober on my own, but I know that there's a power greater than myself that's more powerful than the alcohol that keeps me sober today. And I know it's you guys that helped me through that path. See, because if it wasn't for you guys or the newcomers, man, I wouldn't be here on a Friday night, you know. Normally, I was sitting in the Fresno County Jail drunk tank on a Friday night, you know, or the Sanger Jail, you know. And I'm truly blessed, man. I was mentioning earlier, you know, my wife, I was telling Dale, my wife's never gone to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, man. You know, I've invited her. She doesn't want to go. And she doesn't tell me why. I don't question why, whatever, you know. But she'll listen to the tapes, you know, and there's a few that she likes. She likes to, you know, hear like Albert and people like that and some of the women. She loves that, man, and she'll hear it. And then she goes, I'd love to hear those stories, man, because of how people came from, you know, drinking to recovery. And I said, you know, you could see it live, you could hear it live, you just go with it. But she won't do it. And that's okay, man. You know, that's her. You see, my wife has a different outlet, man. She does other things, you know. Nothing to do with drinking or anything else, but she just has her own way of dealing with things. And I just continue to pray for those, for her, man, you know, because I want her to come to a meeting at least, you know, and be here. But that's okay, you know. For me, I can't change that, you know, but I can just be an example in my home. You know, today before I left over here, she goes, you know what? She goes, I love you, old man. You know? And I'm saying, what do you mean, old man? She goes, yeah, you're an old fart, man. And then I say, you know what, I love you too, man, and I truly do. You know, I wouldn't change her for anybody, you know, because she stuck with me through thick and thin. You know, and something I want to read out of the book. Like I said earlier, it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where and how do we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means that we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God, you know. And I remember coming into that recovery center and seeing the little steps and traditions, you know, on the board. And the only thing that stuck out was God. And I remember thinking, shit, I got myself, what did I get myself into, you know. But it's been the best thing that happened to me. See, Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I owe everything to AA, you know. And I truly mean that, man. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done a wonderful thing in my life and a lot of other people's lives. The newcomer, man, who was the newest guy that came in today? Because I want to give him this book. How many? Was it you, sir? The newest person that identified themselves? Do you have a book? Do you have a book? Anybody else? Because I have a book here of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. You know, like I said, the program is in the book. They talk about the first 164 pages, and I believe that. You know, but for me, it was, you know, when I got here, I started in the back of the book. You know how that goes. You know, and because, you know, I do everything backwards, and I've had to learn how to work on some of those things. But a lot of the promises that have happened to me, man, is, like I said, I didn't know how to read when I got here. Today, I teach a reading program to kids from second to sixth grade in Dinuba. I do that program over there. I've been a DUI instructor. When Jackie lit off that cannon, he got fired and I took his spot. Me and Jack go way back. And he lit up, I guess him and Jerry D did something, I don't know. And I ended up doing that. And I've worked with the juvenile drug court. I've helped start the adult drug court. I don't say that to brag. It's just something that I would never imagine I would be doing, you know. And it's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to go to a conference in Florida, you know, a big drug court conference, man, and I was one of the panelists, you know, and there's like 500 judges, lawyers, and attorneys there. And I went over there for a week, you know, and I remember saying, man, you know, I don't fit in with these suits, man, you know, they're looking at me, you know, and I go over there, you know, all homeboyed out with the glasses and all, you know, like Albert does, you know, and because that's just the way I feel comfortable, man. You know, it's not that I'm trying to prove a point anymore. It's just that's the way I feel good that way. And so I'm looking across the room, man, and I say, man, I wonder if anybody else here is an alcoholic, man, because I need to go to a meeting, man. There's too many suits here. And I see, I don't know if you guys remember Indian Greg. He's sitting across the room. We look at each other, and he goes, hey, we hooked up, and he took me to a Florida Keys meeting in Florida, man. We went out to dinner, and then we went to a meeting, man, and it was good to see him. And I remember, because of this program, man, I got offered a job over there in Florida, man. I don't have a high school education, man. I don't have a degree. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not me, man. You know, it's not me. It's a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I dress up and I show up, and sometimes I don't want to, but I do it anyway. They told me when I got here that there's only two times I go to meetings, when I want to go and when I don't want to go, you know. So that covered it all. See, I had a tough sponsor, man. I called him tonight, and he says, well, you know what? I wanted him to give me this big old fabulous thing of what I have to do up here. He says, you know what? He goes, just get out of the way and be honest. You know, and I feel that I've done that, some of that tonight, man. I'm grateful to be sober, man. And if you want what we have, it says in this book, you might not want what I have, but if you want what Alcoholics Anonymous has, you keep coming back, man. And the best thing I can tell you is get a sponsor, man, because without that, you know, it's going to be tough, man. I tried it my way. It didn't work. I told you about everything I did when I got here. It didn't work. When I gave in, you know, when I surrendered, gave in and gave up is when things started happening in my life, you know. And I still work on it on a daily basis, man. You know, it's not one thing that I did 5, 10 years ago and it's going to go away. It doesn't go away, man. But see, my experience straight that hope today is that, you know, I lost a friend with 15 years of sobriety. You know, not to the disease, not to drinking or using, but what the disease had done to him already. You know, he passed on. And then we lost Kathy Duncan, you know, and she was very instrumental in my sobriety. And that's what I want for me, man. When it's my turn, I don't want to die drunk, man. You know, diabetes and all that other stuff that I got, Graves' disease and all that other stuff, that can take me out, but I don't want to die an alcoholic. You know, so I keep coming back, man, and I'm here with you guys, and I love you guys, man, each and every one of you. I don't know all of you, but, you know, we have the same thing in common, man. And if you're new, you know, one thing they told me was to listen to the similarities, man, not the differences, because I came in here different, you know, thinking I was different. And when I opened my mind up a little bit, like Tomas told me, I started to listen, I started to hear. You know, I started to hear what you guys were talking about. And I remember, you know, early in sobriety, for me, you know, these guys would be talking up here at the podium, and I'd be thinking in the back, well, they're talking all that out of the side of their neck, and then when they leave here in an hour and a half, they're going to go drink. You know, that's what they do here. So I'm going to try to figure that one out. And then what happened to me was that I started hanging around with these guys, going to conventions, going to the meeting before the meeting during the meeting after the meeting. And then what I found out was that they were walking the talk. What they were talking about, they were doing it. You know, and that's where I started to develop some honesty, you know, within myself. You see, because this program works from the inside out, you know. It's not from the outside in, you know. And these steps help me to get there on a daily basis. You know, I love AA, man, and that's all I can say. I'm going to leave you with this, that... if you want a sobriety, man, you know, you keep coming back. We have nothing to hide here from you. It's all in this book, you know. It's all in this book. We don't hide anything here, man. And I know that for me, my life's an open book. You can ask me anything and I'll tell you, you know. A lot of times, you know, they say, well, Abraham's a little rough around the edges or this and that. But it doesn't matter, man. You know, what I've learned here is to live and let live. You know, for me, it's not what people think about me. It's what I think they're thinking about me that gets me in trouble up here. You know, so I have to continue to come back. I have to continue to pray. And I love everybody here, man. And just stick around, man, because this program will work for you and work for me. Thank you.